and gray, but he couldn't be in two places at once. "Go help her!" Percy yelled, holding the golden eagle aloft. "I've got these guys!" Percy didn't have them. Frank knew that. The son of Poseidon was about to be overwhelmed, but Frank ran to Hazel's aid. She was half buried in a collapsed pile of snow bricks. Orion stood over her, trying to protect her, rearing and swatting at the giant with his front hooves. The giant laughed.
"Hello, little pony. You want to play?"
Alcyoneus raised his icy staff. Frank was too far away to help, but he imagined himself rushing forward, his feet leaving the ground.
"Be anything."
He remembered the bald eagles they'd seen on the train ride. His body became smaller and lighter. His arms stretched into wings, and his sight became a thousand times sharper. He soared upward, then dove at the giant with his talons extended, his razor-sharp claws raking across the giant's eyes. Alcyoneus bellowed in pain. He staggered backward as Frank landed in front of Hazel and returned to his normal form.
"Frank!"
She stared at him in amazement, a cap of snow dripping off her head.
"What just... how did..."
"Fool!"
Alcyoneus shouted. His face was slashed, black oil dripping into his eyes instead of blood, but the wounds were already closing.
"I am immortal in my homeland, Frank Jong, and thanks to your friend Hazel, my new homeland is Alaska. You cannot kill me here."
"We'll see," Frank said. Power coursed through his arms and legs. "Hazel, get back on your horse!"
The giant charged, and Frank charged to meet him. He remembered the bear he'd met face to face when he was a child. As he ran, his body became heavier, thicker, rippling with muscles. He crashed into the giant as a full-grown grizzly, 1,000 pounds of pure force. He was still small compared to Alcyoneus, but he slammed into the giant with such momentum, Alcyoneus toppled into an icy watchtower that collapsed on top of him. Frank sprang at the giant's head. A swipe of his claw was like a heavyweight fighter swinging a chainsaw. Frank bashed the giant's face back and forth until his metallic features began to dent.
"Ugh!"
the giant mumbled in a stupor. Frank changed to his regular form. His backpack was still with him. He grabbed the rope he'd bought in Seward, quickly made a noose, and fastened it around the giant's scaly dragon foot.
"Hazel, here!"
He tossed her the other end of the rope.
"I've got an idea, but we'll have to..."
"Kill, you,
Alcyoneus muttered. Frank ran to the giant's head, picked up the nearest heavy object he could find, a legion shield, and slammed it into the giant's nose. The giant said,
"Ugh!"
Frank looked back at Hazel.
"How far can Orion pull this guy?"
Hazel just stared at him.
You were a bird, then a bear, and..."
"I'll explain later," Frank said. "We need to drag this guy inland, as fast and as far as we can."
"But Percy,"
Hazel said. Frank cursed. How could he have forgotten? Through the ruins of the camp, he saw Percy with his back to the edge of the cliff. His hurricane was gone. He held Riptide in one hand and the Legion's Golden Eagle in the other. The entire army of shades edged forward, their weapons bristling.
"Percy!"
Frank yelled. Percy glanced over. He saw the fallen giant and seemed to understand what was happening. He yelled something that was lost in the wind, probably,
"Go!"
Then he slammed Riptide into the ice at his feet. The entire glacier shuddered. Ghosts fell to their knees. Behind Percy, a wave surged up from the bay, a wall of gray water even taller than the glacier. Water shot from the chasms and crevices in the ice. As the wave hit, the back half of the camp crumbled. The entire edge of the glacier peeled away, cascading into the void, carrying buildings, ghosts, and Percy Jackson over the edge. Chapter 47. Frank. Frank was so stunned that Hazel had to yell his name a dozen times before he realized Alcyoneus was getting up again. He slammed his shield into the giant's nose until Alcyoneus began to snore.
Meanwhile, the glacier kept crumbling, the edge getting closer and closer. Thanatos glided toward them on his black wings, his expression serene.
"Ah, yes," he said with satisfaction. "There go some souls, drowning, drowning. You'd best hurry, my friends, or you'll drown too."
"But Percy," Frank could barely speak his friend's name, "is he?"
"Too soon to tell. As for this one,"
Thanatos looked down at Alcyoneus with distaste.
"You'll never kill him here. You know what to do?"
Frank nodded numbly. "I think so."
"Then our business is complete."
Frank and Hazel exchanged nervous looks.
Hazel faltered. "You mean you won't... you're not going to..."
"Claim your life?" Thanatos asked.
"Well, let's see."
He pulled a pure black iPad from thin air. Death tapped the screen a few times, and all Frank could think was, "Please don't let there be an app for reaping souls."
"I don't see you on the list," Thanatos said.
"Pluto gives me specific orders for escaped souls, you see. For some reason, he has not issued a warrant for yours."
"Perhaps he feels your life is not finished, or it could be an oversight, if you'd like me to call and ask."
"No," Hazel yelped. "That's okay."
"Are you sure?" Death asked helpfully.
"I have video conferencing enabled. I have his Skype address here somewhere."
"Really, no."
Hazel looked as if several thousand pounds of worry had just been lifted from her shoulders.
"Thank you."
"Ugh,"
Alcyoneus mumbled. Frank hit him over the head again. Death looked up from his iPad.
"As for you, Frank Jong, it isn't your time either. You've got a little fuel left to burn. But don't think I'm doing either of you a favor. We will meet again under less pleasant circumstances."
The cliff was still crumbling, the edge only 20 feet away now. Orion whinnied impatiently. Frank knew they had to leave, but there was one more question he had to ask.
"What about the doors of death?" he said. "Where are they? How do we close them?"
"Ah, yes."
A look of irritation flickered across Thanatos's face.
"The doors of me. Closing them would be good, but I fear it is beyond my power. How you would do it, I haven't the faintest idea. I can't tell you exactly where they are. The location isn't, well, it's not entirely a physical place. They must be located through questing. I can tell you to start your search in Rome, the original Rome. You will need a special guide. Only one sort of demigod can read the signs that will ultimately lead you to the doors of me."
Cracks appeared in the ice under their feet. Hazel patted Orion's neck to keep him from bolting.
"What about my brother?" she asked. "Is Nico alive?"
Thanatos gave her a strange look, possibly pity, though that didn't seem like an emotion Death would understand.
"You will find the answer in Rome. And now I must fly south to your Camp Jupiter. I have a feeling there will be many souls to reap very soon. Farewell, demigods, until we meet again."
Thanatos dissipated into black smoke. The cracks widened in the ice under Frank's feet.
"Hurry," he told Hazel. "We've got to take Alcyoneus about 10 miles due north."
He climbed onto the giant's chest, and Orion took off, racing across the ice, dragging Alcyoneus like the world's ugliest sled. It was a short trip. Orion rode the glacier like a highway, zipping across the ice, leaping crevices, and skidding down slopes that would have made a snowboarder's eyes light up. Frank didn't have to knock out Alcyoneus too many times, because the giant's head kept bouncing and hitting the ice. As they raced along, the half-conscious golden boy mumbled a tune that sounded like jingle bells. Frank felt pretty stunned himself. He'd just turned into an eagle and a bear. He could still feel fluid energy rippling through his body, like he was halfway between a solid and liquid state. Not only that, Hazel and he had released death, and both of them had survived. And Percy. Frank swallowed down his fear. Percy had gone over the side of the glacier to save them.
"The son of Neptune shall drown."
No, Frank refused to believe Percy was dead. They hadn't come all this way just to lose their friend. Frank would find him, but first they had to deal with Alcyoneus. He visualized the map he had been studying on the train from Anchorage. He knew roughly where they were going, but there were no signs or markers on top of the glacier. He'd just have to take his best guess. Finally, Orion zoomed between two mountains into a valley of ice and rocks, like a massive bowl of frozen milk with bits of cocoa puffs. The giant's golden skin paled as if it were turning to brass. Frank felt a subtle vibration in his own body, like a tuning fork pressed against his sternum. He knew he'd crossed into friendly territory. Home territory.
"Here!"
Frank shouted. Orion veered to one side. Hazel cut the rope and Alcyoneus went skidding past. Frank leaped off just before the giant slammed into a boulder. Immediately, Alcyoneus jumped to his feet.
"What? Where? Who?"
His nose was bent in an odd direction. His wounds had healed, though his golden skin had lost some of its luster. He looked around for his iron staff, which was still back at Hubbard Glacier. Then he gave up and pounded the nearest boulder to pieces with his fist.
"You dare take me for a sleigh ride?"
He tensed and sniffed the air.
"That smell, like snuffed-out souls. Thanatos is free, huh? Blech, it doesn't matter. Gia still controls the doors of death. Now, why have you brought me here, son of Mars?"
"To kill you," Frank said. "Next question?"
The giant's eyes narrowed.
"I've never known a child of Mars who can change his form. But that doesn't mean you can defeat me. Do you think your stupid soldier of a father gave you the strength to face me in one-on-one combat?"
Hazel drew her sword.
"How about two-on-one?"
The giant growled and charged at Hazel, but Orion nimbly darted out of the way. Hazel slashed her sword across the back of the giant's calf. Black oil spouted from the wound. Alcyoneus stumbled.
"You can't kill me, Thanatos or no."
Hazel made a grabbing gesture with her free hand. An invisible force yanked the giant's jewel-encrusted hair backward. Hazel rushed in, slashed his other leg, and raced away before he could regain his balance.
"Stop that!"
Alcyoneus shouted.
"This is Alaska. I am immortal in my homeland."
"Actually," Frank said, "I have some bad news about that. See, I got more from my dad than strength."
The giant snarled.
"What are you talking about, war brat?"
"Tactics," Frank said. "That's my gift from Mars. A battle can be won before it's ever fought by choosing the right ground."
He pointed over his shoulder.
"We crossed the border a few hundred yards back. You're not in Alaska anymore. Can't you feel it, Al? You want to get to Alaska? You have to go through me."
Slowly, understanding dawned in the giant's eyes. He looked down incredulously at his wounded legs. Oil still poured from his calves, turning the ice black.
"Impossible," the giant bellowed.
He charged at Frank, determined to reach the international boundary. For a split second, Frank doubted his plan. If he couldn't use his gift again, if he froze, he was dead. Then he remembered his grandmother's instructions.
"It helps if you know the creature well.
Check.
It also helps if you are in a life-and-death situation, such as combat.
Double check." The giant kept coming. 20 yards. 10 yards.
"Frank?"
Hazel called nervously. Frank stood his ground.
"I got this."
Just before Alcyoneus smashed into him, Frank changed. He'd always felt too big and clumsy. Now he used that feeling.
His body swelled to massive size. His skin thickened. His arms changed to stout front legs. His mouth grew tusks and his nose elongated. He became the animal he knew best, the one he'd cared for, fed, bathed, and even given indigestion to at Camp Jupiter. Alcyonia slammed into a full-grown, 10-ton elephant. The giant staggered sideways. He screamed in frustration and slammed into Frank again. But Alcyonius was completely out of his weight division. Frank headbutted him so hard, Alcyonius flew backward and landed spread-eagled on the ice.
"You can't kill me," Alcyonius growled. "You can't."
Frank turned back to his normal form. He walked up to the giant, whose oily wounds were steaming. The gems fell out of his hair and sizzled in the snow. His golden skin began to corrode, breaking into chunks. Hazel dismounted and stood next to Frank, her sword ready.
"May I?"
Frank nodded. He looked into the giant's seething eyes. "Here's a tip, Alcyonius. Next time you choose the biggest state for your home, don't set a base in the part that's only 10 miles wide. Welcome to Canada, idiot." Hazel's sword came down on the giant's neck. Alcyonius dissolved into a pile of very expensive rocks. For a while, Hazel and Frank stood together, watching the remains of the giant melt into the ice. Frank picked up his rope.
"An elephant?" Hazel asked.
Frank scratched his neck. "Yeah, it seemed like a good idea." He couldn't read her expression. He was afraid he'd finally done something so weird that she'd never want to be around him again. Frank Jong, lumbering klutz, child of Mars, part-time pachyderm. Then she kissed him. A real kiss on the lips. Much better than the kind of kiss she'd given Percy on the airplane.
"You are amazing," she said. "And you make a very handsome elephant."
Frank felt so flustered that he thought his boots might melt through the ice. Before he could say anything, a voice echoed across the valley.
"You haven't won."
Frank looked up. Shadows were shifting across the nearest mountain, forming the face of a sleeping woman.
"You will never reach home in time," taunted the voice of Gia. "Even now, Thanatos is attending the death of Camp Jupiter, the final destruction of your Roman friends."
The mountain rumbled as if the whole earth were laughing. The shadows disappeared. Hazel and Frank looked at each other. Neither said a word. They climbed onto Orion and sped back toward Glacier Bay. Chapter 48 Frank. Percy was waiting for them. He looked mad. He stood at the edge of the glacier, leaning on the staff with the golden eagle, gazing down at the wreckage he'd caused, several hundred acres of newly opened water dotted with icebergs and flotsam from the ruined camp. The only remains on the glacier were the main gates, which listed sideways, and a tattered blue banner lying over a pile of snow bricks. When they ran up to him, Percy said, "Hey," like they were just meeting for lunch or something.
"You're alive,"
Frank marveled. Percy frowned.
"The fall? That was nothing. I fell twice that far from the St. Louis Arch."
"You did what?"
Hazel asked.
"Never mind. The important thing was I didn't drown."
"So the prophecy was incomplete."
Hazel grinned.
"It probably said something like, 'The son of Neptune will drown a whole bunch of ghosts.'"
Percy shrugged. He was still looking at Frank like he was miffed.
"I got a bone to pick with you, Jong. You can turn into an eagle and a bear?"
"And an elephant," Hazel said proudly.
"An elephant?"
Percy shook his head in disbelief.
"That's your family gift? You can change shape?"
Frank shuffled his feet.
Yeah.
Paracliminus, my ancestor, the Argonaut, he could do that. He passed down the ability."
"And he got that gift from Poseidon," Percy said. "That's completely unfair. I can't turn into animals.
Frank stared at him.
Unfair? You can breathe underwater and blow up glaciers and summon freaking hurricanes.
And it's unfair that I can be an elephant?
Percy considered.
Okay, I guess you got a point. But next time I say you're totally beast...
Just shut up, Frank said. Please?
Percy cracked a smile.
If you guys are done, Hazel said, we need to go. Camp Jupiter is under attack. They could use that gold eagle.
Percy nodded.
One thing first, though. Hazel, there's about a ton of Imperial gold weapons and armor at the bottom of the bay now, plus a really nice chariot. I'm betting that stuff could come in handy.
It took them a long time. Too long. But they all knew those weapons could make the difference between victory and defeat if they got them back to camp in time. Hazel used her abilities to levitate some items from the bottom of the sea. Percy swam down and brought up more. Even Frank helped by turning into a seal, which was kind of cool, though Percy claimed his breath smelled like fish. It took all three of them to raise the chariot, but finally they'd managed to haul everything ashore to a black sand beach near the base of the glacier. They couldn't fit everything in the chariot, but they used Frank's rope to strap down most of the gold weapons and the best pieces of armor.
It looks like Santa's sleigh, Frank said. Can Orion even pull that much?
Orion huffed.
Hazel, Percy said, I am seriously going to wash your horse's mouth with soap. He says yes, he can pull it, but he needs food.
Hazel picked up an old Roman dagger, a pugio. It was bent and dull, so it wouldn't be much good in a fight, but it looked like solid Imperial gold.
Here you go, Orion, she said. High-performance fuel.
The horse took the dagger in his teeth and chewed it like an apple. Frank made a silent oath never to put his hand near that horse's mouth.
I'm not doubting Orion's strength, he said carefully, but will the chariot hold up?
The last one...
This one has Imperial gold wheels and axle, Percy said. It should hold.
If not, Hazel said, this is going to be a short trip.
But we're out of time. Come on.
Frank and Percy climbed into the chariot. Hazel swung up onto Orion's back.
Giddy up, she yelled.
The horse's sonic boom echoed across the bay. They sped south, avalanches tumbling down the mountains as they passed.
Chapter 49 Percy 4 hours. That's how long it took the fastest horse on the planet to get from Alaska to San Francisco Bay, heading straight over the water down the northwest coast. That's also how long it took for Percy's memory to return completely. The process had started in Portland when he had drunk the Gorgon's blood, but his past life had still been maddeningly fuzzy. Now, as they headed back into the Olympian gods' territory, Percy remembered everything. The war with Kronos, his 16th birthday at Camp Half-Blood, his trainer Chiron the Centaur, his best friend Grover, his brother Tyson, and most of all, Annabeth. 2 great months of dating and then boom, he'd been abducted by the alien known as Hera. Or Juno, whatever. 8 months of his life stolen. Next time Percy saw the Queen of Olympus, he was definitely going to give her a goddess-sized slap upside the head. His friends and family must be going out of their minds. If Camp Jupiter was in such bad trouble, he could only guess what Camp Half-Blood must be facing without him. Even worse, saving both camps would be only the beginning. According to Alcyoneus, the real war would happen far away, in the homeland of the gods. The giants intended to attack the original Mount Olympus and destroy the gods forever. Percy knew that giants couldn't die unless demigods and gods fought them together. Nico had told him that. Annabeth had mentioned it too, back in August, when she'd speculated that the giants might be part of the new Great Prophecy, what the Romans called the Prophecy of Seven. That was the downside of dating the smartest girl at camp. You learn stuff. He understood Juno's plan, unite the Roman and Greek demigods to create an elite team of heroes, then somehow convince the gods to fight alongside them. But first, they had to save Camp Jupiter. The coastline began to look familiar. They raced past the Mendocino Lighthouse. Shortly afterward, Mount Tam and the Marin Headlands loomed out of the fog. Orion shot straight under the Golden Gate Bridge into San Francisco Bay. They tore through Berkeley and into the Oakland Hills. When they reached the hilltop above the Caldecott Tunnel, Orion shuddered like a broken car and came to a stop, his chest heaving. Hazel patted his sides lovingly. "You did great, Orion." The horse was too tired even to cuss. "Of course I did great. What did you expect?" Percy and Frank jumped off the chariot. Percy wished there'd been comfortable seats or an in-flight meal. His legs were wobbly. His joints were so stiff he could barely walk. If he went into battle like this, the enemy would call him Old Man Jackson. Frank didn't look much better. He hobbled to the top of the hill and peered down at the camp.
"Guys, you need to see this."
When Percy and Hazel joined him, Percy's heart sank. The battle had begun, and it wasn't going well. The 12th Legion was arrayed on the field of Mars, trying to protect the city. Scorpions fired into the ranks of the Earthborn. Hannibal the Elephant plowed down monsters right and left, but the defenders were badly outnumbered. On her Pegasus Scipio, Rhaena flew around the giant Polybetes, trying to keep him occupied. The Lares had formed shimmering purple lines against a mob of black, vaporous shades in ancient armor. Veteran demigods from the city had joined the battle and were pushing their shield wall against an onslaught of wild centaurs. Giant eagles circled the battlefield doing aerial combat with two snake-haired ladies in green bargain mart vests, Stheno and Uriel. The Legion itself was taking the brunt of the attack, but their formation was breaking. Each cohort was an island in a sea of enemies. The Cyclopes' siege tower shot glowing green cannonballs into the city, blasting craters in the forum, reducing houses to ruins. As Percy watched, a cannonball hit the Senate House and the dome partially collapsed.
"We're too late," Hazel said.
"No," Percy said. "They're still fighting. We can do this."
"Where's Lupa?"
Frank asked, desperation creeping into his voice.
"She and the wolves, they should be here."
Percy thought about his time with the wolf goddess. He'd come to respect her teachings, but he'd also learned that wolves had limits. They weren't front-line fighters. They only attacked when they had vastly superior numbers, and usually under the cover of darkness. Besides, Lupa's first rule was self-sufficiency. She would help her children as much as she could, train them to fight. But in the end, they were either predator or prey. Romans had to fight for themselves. They had to prove their worth or die. That was Lupa's way.
"She did what she could," Percy said. "She slowed down the army on its way south. Now it's up to us. We've got to get the Gold Eagle and these weapons to the Legion."
"But Orion is out of steam," Hazel said. "We can't haul this stuff ourselves."
"Maybe we don't have to."
Percy scanned the hilltops. If Tyson had gotten his dream message in Vancouver, help might be close. He whistled as loud as he could, a good New York cab whistle that would have been heard all the way from Times Square to Central Park. Shadows rippled in the trees. A huge black shape bounded out of nowhere, a mastiff the size of an SUV with a cyclops and a harpy on her back.
"Hellhound!"
Frank scrambled backward.
"It's okay," Percy grinned. "These are friends."
"Brother!"
Tyson climbed off and ran toward Percy. Percy tried to brace himself, but it was no good. Tyson slammed into him and smothered him in a hug. For a few seconds, Percy could only see black spots and lots of flannel. Then Tyson let go and laughed with delight, looking Percy over with that massive baby brown eye.
"You are not dead," he said. "I like it when you are not dead."
Ella fluttered to the ground and began preening her feathers.
"Ella found a dog," she announced. "A large dog. And a cyclops."
Was she blushing?
Before Percy could decide, his black mastiff pounced on him, knocking Percy to the ground and barking so loudly that even Orion backed up.
"Hey, Mrs. O'Leary," Percy said. "Yeah, I love you too, girl. Good dog."
Hazel made a squeaking sound.
"You have a hellhound named Mrs. O'Leary?"
Long story.
Percy managed to get to his feet and wipe off the dog slobber.
You can ask your brother.
His voice wavered when he saw Hazel's expression. He'd almost forgotten that Nico D'Angelo was missing. Hazel had told him what Thanatos had said about searching for the doors of death in Rome, and Percy was anxious to find Nico for his own reasons, to wring the kid's neck for having pretended he didn't know Percy when he first came to camp. Still, he was Hazel's brother, and finding him was a conversation for another time.
"Sorry," he said, "but yeah, this is my dog, Mrs. O'Leary. Tyson, these are my friends, Frank and Hazel."
Percy turned to Ella, who was counting all the barbs in one of her feathers.
"Are you okay?" he asked. "We were worried about you."
"Ella is not strong," she said. "Cyclopes are strong. Tyson found Ella. Tyson took care of Ella."
Percy raised his eyebrows. Ella was blushing.
"Tyson," he said. "You big charmer, you."
Tyson turned the same color as Ella's plumage.
No.
He leaned down and whispered nervously, loud enough for all the others to hear.
"She is pretty."
Frank tapped his head like he was afraid his brain had short-circuited.
"Anyway, there's this battle happening?"
"Right," Percy agreed. "Tyson, where's Annabeth? Is any other help coming?"
Tyson pouted. His big brown eye got misty.
"The big ship is not ready. Leo says tomorrow, maybe 2 days. Then they will come."
"We don't have 2 minutes," Percy said. "Okay, here's the plan."
As quickly as possible, he pointed out which were the good guys and the bad guys on the battlefield. Tyson was alarmed to learn that bad Cyclopes and bad Centaurs were in the giant's army.
"I have to hit pony men?"
"Just scare them away," Percy promised.
Percy?
Frank looked at Tyson with trepidation. "I just don't want our friend here getting hurt. Is Tyson a fighter?" Percy smiled.
"Is he a fighter? Frank, you're looking at General Tyson of the Cyclops Army. And by the way, Tyson, Frank is a descendant of Poseidon."
"Brother!"
Tyson crushed Frank in a hug. Percy stifled a laugh.
"Actually, he's more like a great... Oh, never mind. Yeah, he's your brother."
"Thanks,"
Frank mumbled through a mouthful of flannel.
"But if the Legion mistakes Tyson for an enemy..."
"I've got it."
Hazel ran to the chariot and dug out the biggest Roman helmet she could find, plus an old Roman banner embroidered with SPQR. She handed them to Tyson.
"Put those on, big guy. Then our friends will know you're on our team."
"Yay!"
Tyson said.
"I'm on your team."
The helmet was ridiculously small, and he put the cape on backward, like a SPQR baby bib.
"It'll do," Percy said. "Ella, just stay here. Stay safe."
"Safe," Ella repeated. "Ella likes being safe. Safety in numbers. Safety deposit boxes. Ella will go with Tyson."
"What?"
Percy said.
"Oh, fine. Whatever. Just don't get hurt. And Mrs. O'Leary?"
"Roof."
"How do you feel about pulling a chariot?"
Chapter 50. Percy. They were, without a doubt, the strangest reinforcements in Roman military history. Hazel rode Orion, who had recovered enough to carry one person at normal horse speed, though he cursed about his aching hooves all the way downhill. Frank transformed into a bald eagle, which Percy still found totally unfair, and soared above them. Tyson ran down the hill, waving his club and yelling,
"Bad pony men! Boo!"
while Ella fluttered around him, reciting facts from the old farmer's almanac. As for Percy, he rode Mrs. O'Leary into battle with a chariot full of imperial gold equipment clanking and clinking behind, the golden eagle standard of the 12th Legion raised high above him. They skirted the perimeter of the camp and took the northernmost bridge over the Little Tiber, charging onto the field of Mars at the western edge of the battle. A horde of Cyclopes was hammering away at the campers of the 5th cohort, who were trying to keep their shields locked just to stay alive. Seeing them in trouble, Percy felt a surge of protective rage. These were the kids who'd taken him in. This was his family. He shouted, "Fifth cohort!" and slammed into the nearest Cyclops. The last things the poor monster saw were Mrs. O'Leary's teeth. After the Cyclops disintegrated, and stayed disintegrated, thanks to death, Percy leaped off his hellhound and slashed wildly through the other monsters. Tyson charged at the Cyclops' leader, Ma Gasket, her chainmail dress spattered with mud and decorated with broken spears. She gawked at Tyson and started to say, "Who?" Tyson hit her in the head so hard, she spun in a circle and landed on her rump.
"Bad Cyclops lady," he bellowed. "General Tyson says, go away!"
He hit her again, and Ma Gasket broke into dust. Meanwhile, Hazel charged around on Orion, slicing her spatha through one Cyclops after another, while Frank blinded the enemies with his talons. Once every Cyclops within 50 yards had been reduced to ashes, Frank landed in front of his troops and transformed into a human. His centurion's badge and mural crown gleamed on his winter jacket.
"Fifth cohort," he bellowed, "get your imperial gold weapons right here."
The campers recovered from their shock and mobbed the chariot. Percy did his best to hand out equipment quickly.
"Let's go, let's go," Dakota urged, grinning like a madman as he swigged red Kool-Aid from his flask. "Our comrades need help."
Soon the fifth cohort was equipped with new weapons and shields and helmets. They weren't exactly consistent. In fact, they looked like they'd been shopping at a King Midas clearance sale. But they were suddenly the most powerful cohort in the Legion.
"Follow the eagle," Frank ordered. "To battle!"
The campers cheered. As Percy and Mrs. O'Leary charged onward, the entire cohort followed, 40 extremely shiny gold-plated warriors screaming for blood. They slammed into a herd of wild centaurs that were attacking the third cohort. When the campers of the third saw the eagle standard, they shouted insanely and fought with renewed effort. The centaurs didn't stand a chance. The two cohorts crushed them like a vice. Soon there was nothing left but piles of dust and assorted hooves and horns. Percy hoped Chiron would forgive him, but these centaurs weren't like the party ponies he'd met before. They were some other breed. They had to be defeated.
"Form ranks!"
the centurion shouted. The two cohorts came together, their military training kicking in. Shields locked, they marched into battle against the Earthborn. Frank shouted,
"Pila!"
100 spears bristled when Frank yelled, "Fire!" They sailed through the air, a wave of death cutting through the 6-armed monsters. The campers drew swords and advanced toward the center of the battle. At the base of the aqueduct, the first and second cohorts were trying to encircle Polybetes, but they were taking a pounding. The remaining Earthborn threw barrage after barrage of stone and mud. Carpoy grain spirits, those horrible little piranha cupids, were rushing through the tall grass, abducting campers at random, pulling them away from the line. The giant himself kept shaking basilisks out of his hair. Every time one landed, the Romans panicked and ran. Judging from their corroded shields and the smoking plumes on their helmets, they'd already learned about the basilisk's poison and fire. Reyna soared above the giant, diving in with her javelin whenever he turned his attention to the ground troops. Her purple cloak snapped in the wind. Her golden armor gleamed. Polybetes jabbed his trident and swung his weighted net, but Scipio was almost as nimble as Orion. Then Reyna noticed the fifth cohort marching to their aid with the eagle. She was so stunned, the giant almost swatted her out of the air, but Scipio dodged. Reyna locked eyes with Percy and gave him a huge smile.
"Romans!" her voice boomed across the field. "Rally to the eagle!"
Demigods and monsters alike turned and gawked as Percy bounded forward on his hellhound.
"What is this?"
Polybetes demanded.
"What is this?"
Percy felt a rush of power coursing through the standard staff. He raised the eagle and shouted,
12th Legion Fulminata!
Thunder shook the valley,
The eagle let loose a blinding flash, and 1,000 tendrils of lightning exploded from its golden wings, arcing in front of Percy like the branches of an enormous deadly tree, connecting with the nearest monsters, leaping from one to another, completely ignoring the Roman forces. When the lightning stopped, the first and second cohorts were facing one surprised-looking giant and several hundred smoking piles of ash. The enemy's center line had been charred to oblivion. The look on Octavian's face was priceless. The centurion stared at Percy with shock, then outrage. Then, when his own troops started to cheer, he had no choice except to join the shouting. "Rome! Rome!" The giant Polybetes backed up uncertainly, but Percy knew the battle wasn't over. The fourth cohort was still surrounded by Cyclopes. Even Hannibal the elephant was having a hard time wading through so many monsters. His black Kevlar armor was ripped so that his label just said, "Ant." The veterans and Lares on the eastern flank were being pushed toward the city. The monster's siege tower was still hurling explosive green fireballs into the streets. The Gorgons had disabled the giant eagles and now flew unchallenged over the giant's remaining centaurs and the Earthborn, trying to rally them.
"Stand your ground," Sino yelled. "I've got free samples."
Polybetes bellowed. 12 fresh basilisks fell out of his hair, turning the grass to poison yellow.
"You think this changes anything, Percy Jackson? I cannot be destroyed. Come forward, son of Neptune. I will break you."
Percy dismounted. He handed Dakota the standard. "You are the cohort senior centurion. Take care of this." Dakota blinked, then he straightened with pride. He dropped his Kool-Aid flask and took the eagle.
"I will carry it with honor."
"Frank, Hazel, Tyson," Percy said, "help the fourth cohort. I've got a giant to kill."
He raised Riptide, but before he could advance, horns blew in the northern hills. Another army appeared on the ridge. Hundreds of warriors in black and gray camouflage armed with spears and shields. Interspersed among their ranks were 12 battle forklifts, their sharpened tines gleaming in the sunset and flaming bolts knocked in their crossbows.
"Amazons," Frank said. "Great."
Polybetes laughed.
"You see, our reinforcements have arrived. Rome will fall today."
The Amazons lowered their spears and charged down the hill. Their forklifts barreled into battle. The giant's army cheered. Until the Amazons changed course and headed straight for the monster's intact eastern flank.
"Amazons, forward!"
On the largest forklift stood a girl who looked like an older version of Reyna, in black combat armor with a glittering gold belt around her waist.
"Queen Hilla," said Hazel. "She survived."
The Amazon queen shouted,
"To my sister's aid! Destroy the monsters!"
"Destroy!"
her troops' cry echoed through the valley. Reyna wheeled her Pegasus toward Percy. Her eyes gleamed. Her expression said, "I could hug you right now." She shouted,
"Romans, advance!"
The battlefield descended into absolute chaos. Amazon and Roman lines swung toward the enemy like the doors of death themselves. But Percy had only one goal. He pointed at the giant.
"You, me, to the finish."
They met by the aqueduct, which had somehow survived the battle so far. Polybetes fixed that. He swiped his trident and smashed the nearest brick arch, unleashing a waterfall.
"Go on then, son of Neptune," Polybetes taunted. "Let me see your power. Does water do your bidding? Does it heal you? But I am born to oppose Neptune."
The giant thrust his hand under the water. As the torrent passed through his fingers, it turned dark green. He flung some at Percy, who instinctively deflected it with his will. The liquid splattered the ground in front of him. With a nasty hiss, the grass withered and smoked.
"My touch turns water to poison," Polybetes said. "Let's see what it does to your blood."
He threw his net at Percy,
But Percy rolled out of the way. He diverted the waterfall straight into the giant's face. While Polybetes was blinded, Percy charged. He plunged Riptide into the giant's belly, then withdrew it and vaulted away, leaving the giant roaring in pain. The strike would have dissolved any lesser monster, but Polybetes just staggered and looked down at the golden ichor, the blood of immortals spilling from his wound. The cut was already closing.
"Good try, demigod," he snarled. "But I will break you still."
"Gotta catch me first," Percy said.
He turned and bolted toward the city.
"What?"
the giant yelled incredulously.
"You run, coward? Stand still and die!"
Percy had no intention of doing that. He knew he couldn't kill Polybetes alone, but he did have a plan. He passed Mrs. O'Leary, who looked up curiously with a gorgon wriggling in her mouth.
"I'm fine,"
Percy yelled as he ran by, followed by a giant screaming bloody murder. He jumped over a burning scorpion and ducked as Hannibal threw a cyclops across his path. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Tyson pounding the Earthborn into the ground like a game of whack-a-mole. Ella was fluttering above him, dodging missiles and calling out advice.
"The groin. The Earthborn's groin is sensitive."
Smash.
"Good, yes. Tyson found its groin."
"Percy needs help?"
Tyson called.
"I'm good."
"Die!"
Polybetes yelled, closing fast. Percy kept running. In the distance, he saw Hazel and Orion galloping across the battlefield, cutting down centaurs and carpoi. One grain spirit yelled,
"Wheat! I'll give you wheat!"
But Orion stomped him into a pile of breakfast cereal. Queen Hilla and Reyna joined forces, Forklift and Pegasus riding together, scattering the dark shades of fallen warriors. Frank turned himself into an elephant and stomped through some cyclopes, and Dakota held the golden eagle high, blasting lightning at any monsters that dared to challenge the fifth cohort. All that was great, but Percy needed a different kind of help. He needed a god. He glanced back and saw the giant almost within arm's reach. To buy some time, Percy ducked behind one of the aqueduct's columns. The giant swung his trident. When the column crumbled, Percy used the unleashed water to guide the collapse, bringing down several tons of bricks on the giant's head. Percy bolted for the city limits.
"Terminus!" he yelled.
The nearest statue of the god was about 60 feet ahead. His stone eyes snapped open as Percy ran toward him.
"Completely unacceptable," he complained. "Buildings on fire! Invaders! Get them out of here, Percy Jackson!"
"I'm trying," he said. "But there's this giant Polybetes."
"Yes, I know! Wait, excuse me a moment."
Terminus closed his eyes in concentration. A flaming green cannonball sailed overhead and suddenly vaporized.
"I can't stop all the missiles,"
Terminus complained.
"Why can't they be civilized and attack more slowly?
I'm only one god."
"Help me kill the giant," Percy said, "and this will all be over. A god and demigod working together, that's the only way to kill him."
Terminus sniffed.
"I guard borders. I don't kill giants. It's not in my job description."
"Terminus, come on!"
Percy took another step forward, and the god shrieked indignantly.
"Step right there, young man! No weapons inside the Pomerian line!"
"But we're under attack!"
"I don't care! Rules are rules! When people don't follow the rules, I get very, very angry!"
Percy smiled.
"Hold that thought."
He sprinted back toward the giant.
"Hey, ugly!"
"Roar!"
Polybetes burst from the ruins of the aqueduct. The water was still pouring over him, turning to poison and creating a steaming marsh around his feet.
You will die slowly,"
the giant promised. He picked up his trident, now dripping with green venom. All around them, the battle was winding down. As the last monsters were mopped up, Percy's friends started gathering, forming a ring around the giant.
"I will take you prisoner, Percy Jackson," Polybetes snarled. "I will torture you under the sea, Every day the water will heal you, and every day I will bring you closer to death.
Great offer, Percy said, but I think I'll just kill you instead.
Polybetes bellowed in rage. He shook his head, and more basilisks flew from his hair.
Get back, Frank warned.
Fresh chaos spread through the ranks. Hazel spurred Orion and put herself between the basilisks and the campers. Frank changed form, shrinking into something lean and furry. A weasel? Percy thought Frank had lost his mind, but when Frank charged the basilisks, they absolutely freaked out. They slithered away with Frank chasing after them in hot, weaselly pursuit. Polybetes pointed his trident and ran toward Percy. As the giant reached the Pomerian line, Percy jumped aside like a bullfighter. Polybetes barreled across the city limits.
That's it! Terminus cried. That's against the rules!
Polybetes frowned, obviously confused that he was being told off by a statue.
What are you?
He growled.
Shut up!
He pushed the statue over and turned back to Percy.
Now I'm mad! Terminus shrieked. I'm strangling you! Feel that? Those are my hands around your neck, you big bully! Get over here! I'm going to headbutt you so hard!
Enough!
The giant stepped on the statue and broke Terminus in three pieces, pedestal, body, and head.
You didn't!
Shouted Terminus.
Percy Jackson, you've got yourself a deal! Let's kill this upstart!
The giant laughed so hard that he didn't realize Percy was charging until it was too late. Percy jumped up, vaulting off the giant's knee and drove Riptide straight through one of the metal mouths on Polybetes' breastplate, sinking the celestial bronze hilt deep in his chest. The giant stumbled backward, tripping over Terminus's pedestal and crashing to the ground. While he was trying to get up, clawing at the sword in his chest, Percy hefted the head of the statue.
You'll never win, the giant groaned. You cannot defeat me alone.
I'm not alone.
Percy raised the stone head above the giant's face.
I'd like you to meet my friend Terminus. He's a god.
Too late. Awareness and fear dawned in the giant's face. Percy smashed the god's head as hard as he could into Polybetes' nose, and the giant dissolved, crumbling into a steaming heap of seaweed, reptile skin, and poisonous muck. Percy staggered away, completely exhausted.
Ha! Said the head of Terminus. That will teach him to obey the rules of Rome.
For a moment, the battlefield was silent, except for a few fires burning and a few retreating monsters screaming in panic. A ragged circle of Romans and Amazons stood around Percy. Tyson, Ella, and Mrs. O'Leary were there. Frank and Hazel were grinning at him with pride. Orion was nibbling contentedly on a golden shield. The Romans began to chant, Percy! Percy! They mobbed him. Before he knew it, they were raising him on a shield. The cry changed to, Praetor! Praetor! Among the chanters was Reina herself, who held up her hand and grasped Percy's in congratulation. Then the mob of cheering Romans carried him around the Pomerian line, carefully avoiding Terminus's borders, and escorted him back home to Camp Jupiter. Chapter 51 Percy. The Feast of Fortuna had nothing to do with Tuna, which was fine with Percy. Campers, Amazons, and Larrys crowded the mess hall for a lavish dinner. Even the fawns were invited, since they'd helped out by bandaging the wounded after the battle. Wind nymphs zipped around the room, delivering orders of pizza, burgers, steaks, salads, Chinese food, and burritos, all flying at terminal velocity. Despite the exhausting battle, everyone was in good spirits. Casualties had been light, and the few campers who'd previously died and come back to life, like Gwen, hadn't been taken to the underworld. Maybe Thanatos had turned a blind eye, or maybe Pluto had given those folks a pass, like he had for Hazel. Whatever the case, nobody complained. Colorful Amazon and Roman banners hung side by side from the rafters. The restored golden eagle stood proudly behind the praetor's table, and the walls were decorated with cornucopias, magical horns of plenty that spilled out recycling waterfalls of fruit, chocolate, and fresh-baked cookies. The cohorts mingled freely with the Amazons, jumping from couch to couch as they pleased, and for once the soldiers of the Fifth were welcome everywhere. Percy changed seats so many times he lost track of his dinner. There was a lot of flirting and arm wrestling, which seemed to be the same thing for the Amazons. At one point, Percy was cornered by Kinsey, the Amazon who'd disarmed him in Seattle. He had to explain that he already had a girlfriend. Fortunately, Kinsey took it well. She told him what had happened after they'd left Seattle, how Hilla had defeated her challenger Otrera in 2 consecutive duels to the death, so that the Amazons were now calling their queen Hilla Twice Kill. "Otrera stayed dead the second time," Kinsey said, batting her eyes. "We have you to thank for that. If you ever need a new girlfriend, well, I think you'd look great in an iron collar and an orange jumpsuit." Percy couldn't tell if she was kidding or not. He politely thanked her and changed seats. Once everyone had eaten and the plates stopped flying, Reyna made a short speech. She formally welcomed the Amazons, thanking them for their help. Then she hugged her sister and everybody applauded. Reyna raised her hands for quiet. "My sister and I haven't always seen eye to eye." Hilla laughed. "That's an understatement." "She joined the Amazons," Reyna continued. "I joined Camp Jupiter. But looking around this room, I think we both made good choices. Strangely, our destinies were made possible by the hero you all just raised to praetor on the battlefield, Percy Jackson." More cheering. The sisters raised their glasses to Percy and beckoned him forward. Everybody asked for a speech, but Percy didn't know what to say. He protested that he really wasn't the best person for praetor, but the campers drowned him out with applause. Reyna took away his probatio neckplate. Octavian shot him a dirty look, then turned to the crowd and smiled like this was all his idea. He ripped open a teddy bear and pronounced good omens for the coming year. Fortuna would bless them. He passed his hand over Percy's arm and shouted, "Percy Jackson, son of Neptune, first year of service." The Roman symbols burned onto Percy's arm. A trident, SPQR, and a single stripe. It felt like someone was pressing a hot iron into his skin, but Percy managed not to scream. Octavian embraced him and whispered, "I hope it hurt." Then Reyna gave him an eagle medal and purple cloak, symbols of the praetor. "You earned these, Percy." Queen Hilla pounded him on the back, "and I've decided not to kill you."
"Thanks," Percy said.
He made his way around the mess hall one more time because all the campers wanted him at their table. Vitellius the Lar followed, stumbling over his shimmering purple toga and readjusting his sword, telling everyone how he'd predicted Percy's rise to greatness.
"I demanded he join the Fifth Cohort," the ghost said proudly. "Spotted his talent right away."
Don the Fawn popped up in a nurse's hat, a stack of cookies in each hand.
"Man, congrats and stuff. Awesome. Hey, do you have any spare change?"
All the attention embarrassed Percy, but he was happy to see how well Hazel and Frank were being treated. Everyone called them the saviors of Rome, and they deserved it. There was even talk about reinstating Frank's great-grandfather, Shen Lun, to the Legion's Roll of Honor. Apparently he hadn't caused the 1906 earthquake after all. Percy sat for a while with Tyson and Ella, who were honored guests at Dakota's table. Tyson kept calling for peanut butter sandwiches, eating them as fast as the nymphs could deliver. Ella perched at his shoulder on top of the couch and nibbled furiously on cinnamon rolls.
"Cinnamon rolls are good for harpies," she said. "June 24th is a good day, Roy Disney's birthday, and Fortuna's feast, and Independence Day for Zanzibar, and Tyson."
She glanced at Tyson, then blushed and looked away. After dinner, the entire Legion got the night off. Percy and his friends drifted down to the city, which wasn't quite recovered from the battle, but the fires were out, most of the debris had been swept up, and the citizens were determined to celebrate. At the Pomerian line, the statue of Terminus wore a paper party hat.
"Welcome, Praetor," he said. "You need any giant